Hello, and welcome to the very first episode of HazMatters, the Dangerously Good Hazmat Podcast, where dangerous goods experts share their insights on what's most important right now in the hazmat supply chain. I'm Jeff Siegel, a primary writer for the Label Master blog. I'm not a DG pro myself. That's why I always make sure to have an expert in the show. Today's topic is shipping COVID-19 patient specimens safely and compliantly. Joining me today from Atlanta, Georgia, is Label Master Senior Manager Jay Johnson. Welcome, Jay.
Hi, Jeff.
Jay's career in dangerous goods goes back to 1991. He has led delegations to the UN Subcommittee of Experts on Transport of Dangerous Goods and is a past chairman of the Dangerous Goods Advisory Council. Most important for our discussion today, he's a globally recognized expert on infectious substance transportation. Jay, why are we talking about COVID-19 patient specimens on a Dangerous Goods podcast?
Sure, and it's real simple. We're in a global pandemic and we're dealing with an infectious substance. People are trying to ship this sample safely and they want to know what they have to do to get their potentially infectious samples moved correctly.
Are these samples actually classified as dangerous goods?
Well, yes, they are. As a matter of fact, the hazardous materials or dangerous goods classification for Division 6.2 has both deadly pathogens and then also pathogens which are potentially infectious or causes diseases that won't kill you, but are still need to be worried about. They're regulated for transport. So there is a classification system for infectious substances. So what is an infectious substance? It's a material that's known or reasonably expected to contain a pathogen. A pathogen would be a microorganism, bacteria, virus, parasite, fungi, or other agent that causes disease in human or animals. So we are dealing with both infectious to humans or infectious to animals. If it's infectious to both humans and animals, it's considered infectious to humans.
So I just want to make sure people know what we're talking about here. You said the samples are classified as category B. Can you really briefly describe what the difference between category A and category B is?
There's two tiers, Cat A and Cat B. Category A are highly contaminant, highly pathogenic, deadly viruses and cultures. This is your Ebola, your Hunter virus. This is where you bleed from your pores and your body and organs start going to pudding. Everything else is category B. So the definition of category B is not category A, or it would be an infectious or potentially infectious material that is not considered highly pathogenic. So this would be your routine or diagnostic specimens. It would include things, if you had a strep throat or if you had a cold, things that don't kill healthy people. And that's one of the big problems in determining what's a category A and category B is the category A definition was for, forms a permanent disability or life-threatening or fatal disease in otherwise healthy humans or animals. So it's not that it'll kill immunocompromised people, but it makes it's life threatening to healthy people, and that's one of the things with the coronavirus and a lot of other diseases. They are in a form that if you are weakened by other things, if you're immunocompromised, it could kill you. But in general, healthy humans and animals might get sick, but it's not going to cause permanent disability. And so with that, the coronavirus or COVID-19 has been classified as a category B because they feel it's not in a form that causes permanent disability or life-threatening to healthy humans or animals. So it's not part of category A.
That's a great explanation. So even though COVID-19 samples aren't necessarily classified as the most dangerous samples, they're still classified as hazmat, and there are very specific steps that shippers have to take to make sure those shipments are safe and compliant. Can you run down the list of what needs to happen there?
Sure, yeah. So again, they are regulated for transport, the same as things like flammable liquids, corrosives, toxic material are regulated for transport. So even though you have blood in you, you don't think of being a hazardous material, when you take it out, it could be potentially infectious to other people. And one of the real troublesome things about biologics or human body fluids is that people can have diseases and not even know it. And so you could be, infected and not know that. So you walk up and you say, oh, here's my body fluid. And they go, so there is rules under OSHA for bloodborne pathogen handling and what's a biohazard. And so they do treat all unscreened blood and tissue as if it's potentially infectious. And the idea here is that there are rules on how to use proper protective equipment, PPE. When you're drawing samples, so if you were a dental hygienist or whatever, you would have protection to make sure you didn't get other people's body fluid in your eyes, and so forth. And at the same time, when you ship, since the people at FedEx and UPS are not trained in bloodborne pathogen, they make it a regulated material with certain levels of packaging and communication on the shipping boxes so that people who come in contact with the boxes know that there's something that's potentially infectious or infectious inside and how to handle it better. So for category B, which is the non-deadly form, in both category A and category B actually have a triple packaging requirement. The idea being that there's a leak-tight primary, a leak-tight or sift-proof secondary, and then a rigid outer packaging. And within those triple packaging requirements, if you have fragile primaries, you need to separate multiple fragile primaries independently with some type of cushioning separatory material. Between the primary and the secondary, you need sufficient or enough absorbent material to absorb the entire contents if it was a liquid. And then you have an outer packaging system that would help protect the entire shipment while in transport so it can handle the rigors of transport. And a category B packaging system must be capable of handling a 1.2 meter drop. In comparison to like category A, where you actually have to be able to handle a 9 meter or 27 foot drop in five different orientations, as well as a steel spike penetration test. But again, that's deadly Ebola versus, flu samples in Cat B. So again, category B, triple packaging, good condition, primary, secondary, outer, sufficient absorbent material to absorb the entire contents. If it's liquid by air, it needs to have a 95 kPa pressure for either the primary or the secondary. Regulations would like an itemized list of contents so people know what's inside. Rigid outer packaging, and then you've got a minimum dimensional requirement so that it's big enough to handle all the markings and labels, etc. And then the package itself for category B must be capable of a 1.2 meter drop in five different orientations.
So in case someone is out there furiously writing down all the details you were just saying, I just wanted to say, if you go to labelmaster.com, you could be two clicks away from finding all the information you need to ship these test samples, the kind of packaging you need, the 3373 labels that you need, and find some real simple guidelines there. So
if someone's new to this and they want to know where to go to find all this stuff, and of course, one of the things, since it is a hazardous material, you do need to be trained on the requirements, but you can find the requirements to ship domestically by ground in 49 CFR, and the specific requirements for category B are found in 173.199. And it will tell you all about the packaging, marking, and labeling requirements for ground transport. And if you were going to be shipping the samples by air, then you could find you could go to the dangerous goods regulations for air, the ICAO dangerous goods regulations, and you could find the requirements for biological substance category B, which is UN 3373. There is a packaging instruction 650. And if you went to packaging instruction 650, it outlines all of the packaging requirements, the testing requirements, and marking and labeling requirements for a biological substance category to be shipped by air. You can get your mode packaging right there. And luckily, the regulations have been harmonized. The World Health Organization was instrumental in putting these requirements together at the UN level. I was fortunate enough to be there at the UN when we were working to develop all these regulations. Most important for this conversation, though, the US has defined both the patient specimens and the cultures of COVID-19 as category B. Now, on the CDC's website, they do refer to a a WHO document that we'll post up that gives guidelines for shipping globally. And the WHO, though, has taken a different tack, and they have decided that the isolates and cultures, which are the concentration of the pathogen, are more dangerous than patient specimens of the same. And so they want the cultures and isolates of COVID-19 to go category A, while patient specimens, which would be blood, sputums, you know, nasal swab, whatever, from patients to go category B. So there is a classification difference between the US and the rest of the world, but I'm sure that doesn't surprise anybody that we would sometimes take a different path.
So Jay, in addition to all the requirements that you've described, these test samples in particular have a very tricky temperature range that they have to be kept at. Can you explain how shippers can pack these samples to best stay in that range?
Sure, be happy to. So not only as a hazardous material do you have to have specific packaging, multiple layers, cushioning, absorbent, communication, which could involve, you know, UN numbers, proper shipping names, for category B, and I don't even want to touch in this podcast category A. It would take too much time to tell you all the things you have to do to ship Ebola or truly deadly pathogens, because you get into shippers' decks, you inspect packaging and so forth. But to answer your question, there is a temperature factor with these samples. When they draw patient specimens from an individual, they need to be analyzed very quickly. And they need to be kept either refrigerated or frozen, depending on how quickly you can get them delivered. The CDC, in its recommendations for shipment, says that once you draw the sample, you should keep it between 2 to 8 degrees Celsius, which is refrigerated, and you have up to 72 hours. If you can't get the sample delivered within that time period, they ask that you freeze the sample at minus 70 degrees C, and then ship the sample to the lab with dry ice. So what you've got is, originally you've got the potential of a refrigerated shipment, which require the use of phase change material to keep something chilled but not frozen, but not too hot either. So you get into insulated packaging, gel bricks, and my hope with this, and they haven't been able to really define this, is that it's not strictly 2 to 8, but more 0 to 8. But either way, it is difficult to keep things refrigerated in insulated packaging using dry ice or even wet ice. You need to be careful with wet ice, but you could use wet ice to keep things cold also. But if you can't get them moving fast enough, then the next default would be to freeze them at minus 70 and then to ship them to the lab using dry ice, which changes phase at like minus 78 degrees C. So it would keep it frozen in the minus 70 range. Now, dry ice by air is a dangerous good also. So you'll not only be shipping infectious substances, you'll be shipping class 9 dry ice if you're going by air. Dry ice is not regulated by ground, but it is regulated by air. But you do need to be careful of these temperatures, because the last thing you want to do is to have them go out of range, and then you could have possible problems with false negatives.
Okay, so with the coronavirus samples, though, a false negative, that means you're telling someone who actually has the disease, has the virus, that they don't.
That would be bad.
So they're going around spreading it because they think they're healthy, and that's really not the situation you want.
No, and that's been a real problem, particularly with a lot of these tests. And they wanted to get a lot of tests out quickly for this COVID-19, but there's a lot of people making tests that not all of them are managing the temperature right, and you've got tests that work with nasal wipes, you've got throat tests, you've got plasma and blood tests, you've got a wide variety. As a matter of fact, in the early days in China, there were a lot of discussions on fecal material, and they really thought the disease was being spread by fecal material. So you have a lot of different body fluids that are being screened, and they all might have different temperature ranges they need to be maintained at. And if you're not maintaining them correctly, that could have a direct impact on how the test reads. And you, like you said, you get a lot of people being told that they didn't have it when they did.
Say you're managing a test site and you're new to dangerous goods shipping. And there's all these requirements, and you can understand, well, I understand the requirements for keeping the sample safe, avoiding false negatives, but what's up with these labels? What's up with this documentation? I'm trying to stop a pandemic. Why do I have to observe these really fine print rules? What would you say to that person?
Sure. Well, as a regulatory expert, you know, we live by the reg, and you know, we go to sleep with 49 CFR, and I would tell you now, if you had problems sleeping, I would highly recommend 49 CFR. But but the regulations are there to protect the public and to protect the people who are working in shipping and receiving from being exposed to dangerous goods. You know, someone asked me about Category B packaging, and they said, you know, am I worried as a passenger on a plane with getting exposed to Category B samples being shipped? And I said, no, I'm much more worried about the people sitting next to me on the plane, but the people who load the plane, who load the aircraft, who deliver and pick up the boxes, they don't know what's inside the box. They've not been trained. They don't, you know, they don't know what the, when something's wet on the outside, what it is. So that's where multiple layers of protection and communication come into play. By having proper shipping names and UN numbers, dangerous goods, hazard labels, and other markings on the package, you can extend the same type of workplace communication for safety that you have with biohazard symbols and so forth onto the packages, so that the driver and the people who are sorting packages can know what's inside, and also know to be careful if they see something wrong with the package.
Thanks, that makes a lot of sense. You mentioned training. Now, again, I'm imagining these test sites, they're talking about setting them up at Walmarts and Targets and CVSs. So a lot of the people doing this, they're just employees who work there. They're not trained to ship this stuff. What do the managers of these sites have to look at as far as training these folks?
Well, sure. And well, hopefully the people who are, you know, who are working at the retails and the stores and so forth can focus on their job, and that they have safety officers or other people who are coming in to help screen them and to take samples and to make sure that they're safe and okay. Whoever's drawing samples or taking samples from patients is required under OSHA to be trained under bloodborne pathogen. So they would have some basic training on personal protective equipment, you know, how to draw samples, how not to endanger themselves when dealing with other people. And so the dangerous goods regulations, in this case, the Cat B requirements we've been talking about, is an extension of that bloodborne pathogen, the idea of multiple layers of protection for the samples, volume limits on how much can go in a package, and communication through both paperwork and package to make sure people know what's going on. The people who are offering them for transport need to know the requirements they need so that they'll know how to mark the package, what kind of packaging to use.
Again, the people who are running these test sites, you just explained what they have to know. And is that something, am I going to have to enroll people in a 4-hour course, or is that something that they can learn pretty quickly and be compliantly trained?
Well, sure. I mean, we do a lot of consultation with lots of different companies all the time, trying to help them to navigate the dangerous goods regulations. And certainly there, because of the pandemic and the need to move things both correctly and safely, there have been some regulatory relief because of COVID-19. And we have seen things such as hand sanitizer and so forth be able to be, in even human body remains, to be able to be moved more quickly and less stringently. You still have to protect and make sure that nobody's getting exposed to anything, but there have been some regulatory relief. Category B is really designed as an extension of the bloodborne pathogen. So, you know, when you go beyond the scope of your workplace safety is when it kicks in. So, you know, you wouldn't be subject to the DOT regulations of transport until you're shipping. But when these people are asked to ship the samples, they're going to have to rely on either getting the training themselves or rely on who, whatever the lab is they're sending to have the right materials in place to get the basic training they need to understand how to mark, label, and build the packaging correctly. Now, again, Category B is much simpler than Category A. I would tell you that if you were having to ship deadly pathogens like Ebola or possibly internationally the COVID-19 cultures, you're going to need formal training on how to do a wide variety of things, including recognize UN spec packaging, marking, labeling, documentation, security, awareness. So there's a lot of things you'd have to do, but Cat B is really meant to get these diagnostic samples moving quickly and safely with the idea that there could be infectious material inside the box and people need to be protected against exposure.
What other questions are you hearing from shippers these days?
Like I mentioned, we're getting a lot of questions about how to properly package COVID-19 samples. A lot of big companies, you know, that move a lot of packages are trying to figure out how to test their own employees and how to get those test samples moved. I had one company call me and they wanted to move their employee samples on their personal Learjet. Apparently they were going to pick up samples from one facility and on their Lear move them to another facility. And so they wanted to know what restrictions were on with that. I've had questions about moving Cat B samples by drone, which I thought was pretty weird, from one facility to another, in the same compound, but over a road. So they were still line of sight, but they wanted to use a drone to move the potentially infectious samples. A lot of questions about hand sanitizer. I think anybody who has tried to find hand sanitizer realizes it's not available. So a lot of companies are making their own. They're distilling alcohol and they're making their own hand sanitizer. And with that, there's a need to ship that flammable liquid without, they don't have the skills and training in place to do dangerous goods transport of flammables. So we've had a lot of requests for assistance there.
Well, thanks again. That was Labelmaster Senior Manager Jay Johnson. For details from today's conversation about COVID-19 test samples, please visit labelmaster.com. And remember, you can get many of your DG shipping questions answered free at the Labelmaster Regulatory Hotline, 1-800-621-5808. It's 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Central Time, Monday through Friday. Thanks for listening to Haz Matters, the Dangerously Good Hazmat Podcast.